Welcome to the Where to Begin podcast. I am Christy Francesco, and with me is my beautiful wife, Morgan. How you doing, honey?
Hello, I'm doing well. Thank you, Christopher.
That's good. So we've been trying to record this episode for a few days now, but I mean, as you all know out there who have parents, you plan something, and then by the end of the day, it's already 11 o'clock, and you got to go to bed. So it's
accurate.
Yeah, it's just been really tough to find a few minutes here, but we are here and we're excited to talk about some pop culture things, you know, television shows that we're watching, what's coming up that we're looking forward to. As we sit here, it's the 15th of May, it's a Saturday night, and it seems like, I guess you could say, huh, normal life is starting to kind of get back to us one day at a time.
Yes.
I mean, heck, Disney World just said, hey, if you're outside, you can put your mask in your pocket. No big deal.
This is incredible.
So if Disney World does it, I mean, Josh, New Jersey should follow suit.
So, our HOA should follow suit and open the pool.
Yeah, let's not get into that. But so before we get started to talk about what's going on, and you know, the question of the podcast is always where to begin. So I just want to begin.
Where to begin?
I kind of want to dote upon my wife right now. And I kind of also want to also give credit to a lot of the, you know, all the working moms that are out there. So, you know, as you guys know, we don't talk about it much, you know, like I have like five podcasts that I do, but I don't talk about them on this show because I try to make it about us and us only. I'm not here to promote anything except for our show. But, you know, I just want to just kind of give a shout out. You know, my wife has her own business, for those of you who obviously maybe don't know or are new to the podcast. And, you know, she busts her butt. And, you know, you talk about, we have a 2.5-year-old. So a lot of the people that listen to the show have kids, right? I'm assuming there's no really reason to listen to us if you don't have kids, because a lot of what we talk about involves kids. So we have a 2.5-year-old, and as it stands right now, Morgan is 7.5 months pregnant.
I should note, the first time I was pregnant, I knew to the day how pregnant I was. But with this one, I'm like, I'm about this pregnant. feel pregnant right now.
She's over 7 months. Mm-hmm. And she works 40 to 60 hours a week, maybe. Uh-huh. And she, you know, is absolutely just killing it with her business. You know, we're at a point now where, geez, within a calendar year, I might be retiring from life. But you know, within about 3 months, she'll take the reins over as the breadwinner of this family.
That's my goal. That has nothing to do with financial freedom and everything to do with gloating.
I just want to give credit because, you know, it takes a different kind of being to have a job, a full-time job, I mean, even a part-time job, and having kid or kids is, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous, really. And I, you know, I was reading this article, not on Business Insider. I was reading this article the other day that I saw. I saw someone post it on Instagram, and a lot of, I guess, experts and doctors of children, they say that if you have kids and a full-time job, you're realistically working 2.5 full-time jobs. That's the equivalent of time that is spent between yourself and your kid or kids, your children, right? Your family. And, you know, seeing that, and like they break it down, and it's just absolutely stunning that a female brain can comprehend the idea to be able to be successful in a business from home while being a wonderful parent all in the same. Oh, and then add in the fact they got to take care of 10-year-olds like their husbands. So
12.
I think that's where the 2.5 full-time jobs comes in, because you're
that
you're,
extra half.
it's that extra part-time job is taking care of the husband or the significant other. You know, I just really just want to say how incredible. I'm not going to say I'm proud of her. I mean, she doesn't need to hear that I'm proud of her, because, you know,
I do,
you know, pride is, kidding. But I'm just so grateful and I'm appreciative, and I'm just every single day, like, I'm not impressed with what she does, and that might come off wrong, but you're going to understand what I mean. I'm not impressed by anything that she does, because she's so friggin' structured. She's so smart. She's so intelligent, and she's got the stick-to-itiveness that not a lot of people have, that I know anyway, that I expect her to be as successful as she is, because I just don't think she even knows how to fail. So, aww. You know, we all fail, obviously, as humans and as parents, but I'm just making a point where she works so hard and so tirelessly at what she does as a CEO of her business, which she is, as a CEO.
Damn right.
As a full-time mother, a pregnant, you know, being, you know, on a third trimester.
I am a pregnant.
Yes, you're a pregnant, in the words of one of our best friends. she's a pregnant, Chris. She can't do anything else. And how incredible she is to me as my wife. And I'm not just saying that to try and get sex, because all I got to do is ask. So take that away.
Not wrong.
So to me, I think it's very important in a marriage, and this is an advice thing, that I think it's very important, guys and ladies, in a marriage to use those words of affirmation, regardless if it's a love language or not. I think it's very important to tell your wife or tell your husband, hey, you know what? You're doing a hell of a job. You're working so hard to provide and to love and to grow, that I just want to let you know that I see you. I recognize what you're doing, and thank you. And, you know, it's not about trying to say after that, I'll do this to measure up to you. It's not about that. It's about literally, I think what a lot of couples these days forget, and it's one of the most important things of a relationship, and especially when you add kids, people forget how important the word team is. And look, marriage ain't easy. Pimping ain't easy.
No, it ain't. Because that's what my business is. Just kidding. It's not.
You know, marriage isn't easy. Relationship's not easy. Parenting isn't easy. And it's not always fun. Morgan doesn't always like me. Regardless of what she tells you on here, she doesn't always like me. I don't always like her.
What?
But there's...
This is news.
But what we do know is that we love each other and we're committed. So even during the bad times, when we're not seeing eye to eye and when things just aren't going our way, we have to work as a team, because there's somebody else in this house that relies on our teamwork to survive.
Yeah.
And so this goes out to all the working moms out there. This is coming from a man, a married man. Just thank you for everything that you guys do. And I hope your significant others are letting you know how valuable you are and how important you are, and that men, we just have to show it better. I know I don't always do it. Sometimes it comes off as I'm taking advantage, or I'm just ungrateful for what she does. Cause look, and I've said this before too, the Eagles schedule just came out a couple of days ago, and my wife just said, make sure you tell, you know, blankety blank in our family who has season tickets that these are the games that you got to go to. Not that, hey, Chris, you can go to these games. It's make sure you get those for yourself or for us. And, you know, just, you know, if I want to go play a sport, Chris, go ahead. You know, it's no big deal. You know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Go enjoy yourself. Have a good time. Go to the gym. Go do this. You know, it's sometimes she'll use it against me. Which
absolutely, I'm literally just racking up points in my book sometimes.
But the point is, my wife, and gentlemen, again, I'm saying this as just myself, but also from a broad scheme of things. You know, she sacrifices so much for the enjoyment and for you know, this marriage and for this house. She sacrifices way more than I do. And she sometimes says, that's not true.
Oh, look, no, it's true.
She sacrifices way more than I do to make sure that, you know, I don't yearn for anything, whether it's physical, material, anything like that. So that I'm good. And sometimes it's at the expense of her sanity, her stress, her sleep. And I'm just hella grateful for it. I hope one day I can pay it back to her tenfold. But just letting everyone know, I know I run off on a tangent here, but I think it's sometimes just things that women need to hear and wives need to hear, that you're just so, I don't say this on podcasts, but you're so fucking valuable to this family and to this house that I just don't think you understand it sometimes. Cause you know, you're probably, when I want to say it, it's 2:30 in the morning and you're working and I'm trying to sleep, but, but I love you. And to all the moms out there and the working moms and just moms overall, just know that you guys are just flat out superstars. And don't ever, you know, God created you guys to be special, special beings. You know, yes, we're all created equal, but I think God did a little extra for you women to be mothers and to be working mothers and to be able to mentally and physically handle that. Because if I had to do what Morgan does, I would have 100% have developed a cocaine habit within 3 weeks.
We wouldn't be able to afford that though.
I would have found a way. It's drugs. You know, isn't that how they do? They just find ways to do it, right? So that's what I just wanted to take a good amount of time out there to talk to you personally, hon, and talk to women out there that, my goodness, you know, you guys make this ship as in like a pirate ship. You guys make this ship go. And
if our home, if our life was a pirate ship, it'd be the Black Pearl. That's cool. And there's holes in the sails.
I like how you said, cause that's cool. So yeah. Just want to let you know that.
Thanks, my love. That was really sweet. But you know, I couldn't do it without your support.
Now it's your turn the next 16 minutes to do that same thing to me. I'm just kidding. All
right, here we go.
No, I'm just joking.
I do want to say though, like I literally couldn't do it without you because I know, especially in the beginning.
Because you have.
Well, yeah, but I mean, without your support, and because there's a lot of hours that I put in that normally would be like our married time, right? And so you sacrifice a lot of time with your wife. And there are times where like you really just need to decompress and you don't get that because I need something. And you've been so incredible. And I think, especially when I first started my business, actually almost a year ago now, officially when I launched it.
That's true.
Yeah, we're coming up on that. I definitely put everything above you and I did not do a good job. And I do think I've been doing a much better job at making time for you, but I've been doing better. It's not the greatest, but I have been doing better. I think like we're back to, we've had some date nights here and there, but
it's just,
you
know, a season.
It's a lot of sacrifice on both ends. Like with all, you know, you say I work till 2 a.m., which is true, not every night, but you know, the consequence for you is you don't get to see your wife as much.
And I mean, I get to see my wife. I don't get all of my wife.
Right. And I feel like, I know sometimes you don't always feel like a priority, which isn't how I see it, but I know that that's how you feel. And I know how my actions can have that impact. But I'm just so grateful for all of your support because I couldn't do without you. And I think one thing that I want to say, if there are any working moms listening, one thing that I've learned over the past 6 months is like, I don't have any free time, right? My time is literally spent between daughter, pregnant, husband, and work. And so it was really important to me that I pivot my business and now I'm doing things that I truly enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when I'm working, it doesn't always feel like work. For some of the clients, some of the work, yes, so it feels like work, but it's really important because now, even though I don't have free time, my work is still something I enjoy.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to be fulfilled by our jobs because we have so much less time than some other people. So I highly recommend if what you're doing isn't bringing you joy, you know, life's too short to spend it on things that don't make you happy and you already are short on time. So I highly recommend taking a look at, you know, maybe seeing if there's other avenues or other things that you can do to make money that would also make you happy.
For sure.
Cause that's definitely a lesson that I learned along the way, but you are amazing, my love.
Oh, well, thank
you. Now, what do you want to buy? No, I'm just kidding.
Nothing.
Just kidding.
It's amazing. On to what we were going to discuss, which is kind of like pop culture stuff. To kind of catch everybody up, we just finished, not just, but like a week or so ago, the brand new series out on Netflix called Shadow and Bone. Now, that was a Leia Bardugo book. She wrote a series of them. I think it's Shadow and Bone. What's the second book?
I can't remember what the second and third one is called, but it's also like, then they also, she has that like kind of spinoff series with it called The Six of Crows. So it's its own separate series.
Yeah, but,
it's tied into the
same. Oh, here it is. It's a Shadow and Bone, Siege and Storm. And
is there something with swords?
Ruin and Rising.
No, swords.
There's three books, no swords.
Samsonite. I was way off.
So what was it? 8 episodes?
I think so, yeah.
8 episodes. So it was absolutely spectacular. I read the book, it's been a long time. Actually, Morgan was the first person to kind of get me the book because my favorite genre of books is, you know, like fantasy and like sci-fi or magic and, you know, stuff
pirates.
Like that. I've read practically every fictional
mysteries.
Pirates book. So your thoughts on that show, hon? Because you never read the book. So
I didn't.
You were watching it strictly off of my recommendation.
I liked it. So one of the things I have problems with like Netflix shows and sometimes, well, HBO, we didn't really watch. I mean, we have it now for a couple for like Justice League type of things, but Netflix, because it's not TV, they can be a lot more graphic and gory with things. And I feel like sometimes they take advantage of that and they do it just for the sake of doing it.
This wasn't bad at all.
It wasn't. And I was worried that this show was going to be another one of those things where it was just like so much like, what, there's that, remember that Hulu show we tried to watch, the superhero one?
It was on Prime, Amazon.
It was on Amazon
The
Prime.
Boys.
Yeah. That was just too much. And so sometimes I worry about shows on these platforms as to whether or not it's going to be too much, because it can just distract me, because I'm a story person. Like, I do genuinely care about story, plot, character development.
For sure, absolutely.
And sometimes those graphics can just take away from it. So I was actually really pleasantly surprised that I didn't think it was super graphic.
I thought it was graphic when it called for it.
Exactly.
Which was great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was afraid it was going to be a little cheesy, because fantasy things can always be a little cheesy, but I love fantasy too. Because I suffer from anxiety, I really like reading fantasy books and watching fantasy shows because it's easier for me to disassociate myself from reality.
Yeah.
So when like scary things happen or bad things happen to characters in fantasy stories, it's hard for me to translate it into real life, where sometimes like if I'm watching a drama or something, that can cause me a lot of anxiety because it seems closer to real. So I do try to stick to that genre a lot because it really does well for my mindset and, you know, what I can process really well. But I thought it was really enjoyable. I thought it was really good. It's interesting. So you and I have talked about like the binge watching. Yeah. I feel like sometimes it seemed like the plot went by a little fast or like all of a sudden, I don't know. It just seemed like things moved really quickly, but I think part of that has to do with the binge watch. Yeah. I feel like if we didn't binge watch something, it would seem like it took longer to develop than it did. So because I think that's interesting.
And because it's almost the same thing that I had the issues with, or we had the issues with Mandalorian. Here we thought, oh, it's moving really slow. Like, I don't even think I can watch it anymore. It's moving so slow. And then like you get to like episodes like 5, 6, 7, 8, and you're like, holy cow, now it makes sense. Like it's that story build, but we've become such a binge watch society that it's hard for us to look at a show like Mandalorian and you have to wait a week for a new episode and you're just like, this is boring. Well, no, it's storytelling.
Exactly.
Not every single show is going to be this, that, story's over. Let's do a new plot. No, there's a build to things.
It's weird. And it's weird, right? Because we want it both ways. Yeah. We want it immediately because we want to see it. But then when we watch it immediately, some of that storytelling almost feels lost.
Yeah, we've been conditioned.
Right. Yeah.
To binge.
We and, have the binge condition.
Right. Exactly. Like that's, you know, that's just how I feel is I prefer appointment television. Morgan, mm-hmm. Never heard of that as of like 6 months ago.
I didn't know it was called appointment television.
TGIF back in the day is appointment television.
Right. It makes sense. Remember when you'd have to, remember the guide and you'd have to, if you missed it, you'd be like, dang it. And you'd have to wait for it to come all the way back.
The guide used to be like, oh my gosh, boy, am I dating myself. So the TV guide channel on the night of like a WWF pay-per-view would have the preview show on the guide for like a half hour, because it's basically it was theirs, paid for by the WWF to be like, oh, this preview's so good, I'm gonna buy the pay-per-view. And I would just be like watching the preview, like I can't get the pay-per-view, but I'll watch this preview so I can see like what the set looks like, if they're gonna show anything good. And then I gotta wait to the next day because I didn't get all the pay-per-views. But yeah, that TV guide, appointment television was everything. Like if you weren't in front of your television at 8 p.m., you come 8:30. If your show's over, you have to wait until the next week because then the rerun would be like on right before the new episode.
Right. Or so you'd have to hope you set your VHS tape up correctly to record. And sometimes like if the time on your VHS was off, then like you would set it to record for that like 30 minutes, but like it would start a little late or end a little early and then you'd miss it. Oh my goodness. And then of course the worst thing is when you record over something you didn't want to record over. Oh goodness.
It's like that Everybody Loves Raymond episode. You haven't seen it, but he recorded the Giants Super Bowl game over his wedding tape. By accident. So it's like he did the wrong tape, but still, that's like you said, like maybe if you accidentally tape over something you didn't want to tape over, like that's why like I used to go over to my aunt's house and she would record all the Monday Night Raws or all the pay-per-views, and she literally had pages and pages of labels so she could just label everything immediately and just stack them up. So she didn't tape over anything, or if she did, she knew what it was. But that's what I miss about appointment television is like you get that build, like, oh my god, what a great episode. I have a week before the next one comes out. It's like it gives you something to look forward to. Yeah. And when things are on Netflix and stuff, like The Circle, it's stupid, but they release it in chunks, which is cool.
Yeah, like, I like that.
You binge the first four and you're like, oh, I want more. I got to wait till next week till the next four come
Who's
out.
Who's going to be blocked?
Who's the catfish? But so we watched Shadow and Bone. I'm trying to think. We're in the middle of season three of Modern Family. Which is an absolutely spectacular television show. I can't believe I waited all this time to watch it.
Well, it took so long because it wasn't really available on any platforms, except I think for Hulu for a little bit of time, but they only had a couple seasons.
Because it was still going on. Yeah.
Right. They didn't have the beginning. So we were never able to find a place where we could start it from the beginning until Peacock came out.
Yeah, right. So there was a thing that came out today, and I want to get your opinion. And I got to find it here real quick. It kind of shows you where we are heading in terms of technology and how we consume our television. And I just thought it was super interesting. The most subscribed streaming services released their numbers, I think a day or two ago, as the second quarter, right? The second quarter is coming to an end. So here we go. The top eight streaming services in the world or in America. This is according to Variety magazine. Number one was Netflix with 207.6 million subscribers. Prime Video and second with 175.
Can I pause and ask you a question about that? If you're a Prime member, do you automatically get the benefits, right?
Yep.
So I'm curious
as to how many of those. It's a skewed number.
Exactly. I think that one, it's skewed for that.
Yeah. Disney Plus, which is probably the true number two, as 104 million. Apple TV 42.6. So what a drop off from the top three to number four. Peacock is at 42 million, and I'm going to rant about Peacock in a second. Hulu comes in at number six at 41.6. I'm surprised at that low number of Hulu because they have a deal with Disney Plus. So I would have thought part of that package deal, Hulu would be higher.
Yeah.
HBO Max comes in at 40.6 million, and Paramount Plus is not doing well. They're at 9 million.
So good. They're brand new. And they also, I don't think they've really, like, I feel like part of their structure is to be able to stream new films, and they haven't done that yet. So I think it'll be curious to see, like, once they add that on, if that grows. I also think they're making it too easy for people to join for 1 month and then leave. Same with HBO. Yeah, people are going to join for 1 month and then leave, depending on what movies are coming out.
Right. So for me, I want to comment on Peacock. I think their app sucks. I really can't stand their streaming service. It's so hard to find what you want around there. Like, and, you know, earlier today I added a show that we are starting to watch, I think The Curse of Oak Island, and I said, add it to my watch list. And I went back into the streaming service, went back into Peacock like an hour later, and I couldn't find my watch list anywhere. I could not. I'm sitting here scrolling all the way down. I'm like, where's my watch list? It tells me what I just watched. That's great. I'm like, now I got to go into the search bar and wait forever for Oak Island to show up just to go to it. I think it's a suck-ass streaming service. They got to do better. Especially the fact they have WWE. The WWE Network was so perfectly done. Like, everything was right there in front of you that I just think that they should be better for being, you know, NBC, one of the biggest companies out there. So Peacock, I'm not a fan of. I think another problem that Peacock has, that even HBO Max I think is running into this problem too, is no original programming. Disney Plus has all this massive original programming, but Disney's different. Disney is its own animal. I mean, they have kids. I mean, kids are the ones that are watching Disney Plus mostly. So that's kind of an anomaly in itself. Prime has its own its own material. Netflix obviously has tons of Netflix produce. I mean, Netflix is winning Oscars now. So I think what's going to hurt Peacock in the long run and HBO Max is they don't have any original programming. If they do, it's not good. So that's where I think Peacock is going to struggle, and I think HBO Max is going to struggle. Apple TV, I'm actually surprised it's only at 42.5 million because they have a lot of original programming. So that's kind of where I'm at with the streaming services. I obviously, looking at these numbers, it's clear that cable is on life support. So your thoughts, Morgan, on streaming services? Is this something you and I have talked about this before, but not on the show? You know, it was just announced that Jungle Cruise, the Big Rock and Emily Blunt movie, is going to be released in theaters and on Disney Plus. Is this going to be something you think that we're going to see more of in the future? And I guess maybe these companies, like you said, have maybe found a way to make money off of it.
I do. But I think one of the problems that America's going to, you know, consumers are going to run into is the fact that right now things are affordable. And I think that, I mean, Netflix, and they're going to raise their prices, and it's going to be harder and harder.
Disney
and
so just
gonna,
did.
Yeah, you're going to find yourself paying more than you would for traditional cable. Because right now, one of the, I think, big kind of positives about streaming services is that you can have a few. You can pick like two or three that you really like, and it's cheaper than cable. And I think we're going down a road where that's not going to happen. And so I think you know, there's going to be a breaking point and a tipping point between what people choose to watch. It's interesting because right now it's cheaper and it's a more affordable option for a lot of people. But when it doesn't become that, I'm curious to see what happens to cable, because what's happening with cable right now is cable companies, which are also tied to internet companies, are lowering their price for cable and increasing their price for internet. So if you try to cut cable from your package, you're still paying an arm and a leg just for internet.
Can you believe it's 2021 and people are being charged for Wi-Fi?
The amount that we are, like, I remember when we were in our apartment together, we paid for cable, mm-hmm. we paid for internet. And when we removed cable, we saved like $10 a month. And it made me so angry.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it should be. And I was like, I can't believe it's expensive. So I think it's kind of curious. I'm kind of curious to see how that all is going to play out, because it's actually ending up being more expensive in some ways, depending on how many platforms you want to be in. As platforms get more expensive, people may go back to cable because they realize, well, it's only $10 more to do it through Comcast. And, you know, Comcast knows that they can get you because, you know, they make cable cheap now because mm-hmm. they know the Wi-Fi is where it's at. So
yeah.
I'm really curious to see how kind of the pricing structure is going to play out and how America takes that, because it's not going to stay affordable for a while. And I also think Amazon Prime is skewed because whoever's a Prime member, I don't know if he gets it. And actually, I don't think their original programming is truly all that great. I think Hulu is lower because you still get so much free stuff from Hulu, and their original programming is good, but probably not good enough for people to pay. Now mm-hmm. we pay for Hulu because Hulu is essentially our cable provider.
Yes.
And we have to have some sort of digital cable because of sports programming. Yeah. I want there to be a platform for sports. That's what I'm waiting for. So that way we don't have to pay for any type of cable, yeah. whether it be through an internet company or be through Hulu in our instance. But I'm sure there's just so many contracts and so much red tape around.
The NFL that. Alone probably supports cable with their contracts with like
right.
ESPN, NBC, NBC, Fox, CBS. Yeah. I mean, they signed, you know, $15 billion deals with each of those networks. So it's like literally one sport can monopolize an entire like cable system.
Yeah.
And that's where it's at. I mean, it's changing a little bit because it looked like, I think beginning in 2023, the NFL signed a huge deal with Amazon Prime. So there's your first step.
Isn't that just for Thursday night football though?
I think it's for Thursday night, and they also might be getting some playoff games and maybe even some like regular Sunday games,
yeah,
like a certain number, but that's your first step to a streaming service.
Yeah. I don't think cable will ever fully go away though, until sports can get out of cable, and sports is so contracted in right now because cable knows that they need that. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really hard for sports to get out of there. Like if we even wanted to get, what was the thing? There was like one kind of streaming service or one thing we wanted
MLB,
to do that
MLB, TV.
But we can't watch Phillies
because we're
games.
In the
it's
area
blacked out
because they have a contract,
which is insane. And so frustrating to me. So I think sports is the one thing that cable is going to hold on to for as long as humanly possible, and cable, and you know, they can't get out of it. Sports companies can't get out of it. Probably, quite frankly, don't want to get out of it.
Oh, I know.
So I think it's going to be a long time before there's major changes,
mm-hmm.
Strictly because of sports. And it's what's tying people into so many platforms, is because like we have to have Hulu TV because of sports. Otherwise, we would not be paying for that, and we would just be going with a couple streaming services.
Absolutely.
And watch the free stuff on Hulu, because most of the stuff on Hulu is free anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So before, you know, we get to the end here, because we've already been talking for 40 minutes.
This is the end. Oh my goodness.
You're a couple of weeks ago were the Oscars, something that you and I
couldn't watch them. It was so bad.
The lowest rated Oscars in like 25, 30 years. And like the drop off of viewers was astounding from just a year ago. I think what was it? Last year was like 43 million people, and this year was 22.
I thought it was 9, unless I'm thinking, I might just get my numbers confused, but it was very low. You're right. It was very, very low. I don't know. I'm all for women empowerment in certain ways and for social empowerment in general, but the Oscars is something that used to just be a fun thing. You watch the red carpet show for the fashion, like you just get to, like, it's just a fun time, and it's turned into a very political thing. And the movies that no one goes to see are the ones getting nominated, and the winners, it seems like they're not winning for their roles. It also seems like people aren't being nominated for certain reasons. And I just feel like it's this whole political mess, and it used to be something that was just fun to watch. Did it have its issues? Absolutely. Like, it definitely definitely is not diverse enough, and that's a huge problem. But and so that is definitely a problem. But in terms of like all the politics tied to it now,
yeah,
and like the fact that when women are on the red carpet, it's like you have to be like careful how you ask them what they're wearing. And I get it. I'm not subjectifying you and saying you're defined by what you're wearing, but it's just, it's a fun thing for people.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I just feel like they used to be this fun show that everyone could enjoy. And now it's like these movies no one's ever heard of.
Yep.
Everyone's asking weird questions because you don't want to come off as offensive or sexist or anything. And everyone's using their speeches instead of to thank their family and to talk about the film, to talk about a social issue or a political thing.
I could care less what you're entitled says about my politics. I don't care.
Right. Like I miss when the Oscars were fun and lighthearted and just watching stars get dolled up and vote, being able to root for movies that you actually saw and cared about.
I know.
And like that I miss, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And my favorite part though, the best Oscar moment ever. I used to work for AMPIS, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. They were one of my clients at one point in time. And when a couple years ago, years and years ago, actually, it was like 4 years ago now, I think, when they announced the like nominees for a category, it wasn't live everywhere, but it was like streamed online. And the person who was, I think she still runs it, her name is Cheryl Boone Isaacs, runs the Academy. She pronounced Dick Pope is Dick Poop. It's really funny.
Of course.
But I don't think anything's been a better Oscar moment than that, except for when What's-His-Name gave the wrong.
Oh my goodness. I know that was awful.
That was so uncomfortable. Awful, but also great.
So the 93rd Academy Awards ceremony was broadcasted from two different spots. So an average of 9.85 million viewers tuned in. That's a 50.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think it wasn't 23.
Over 58% down.
Mm-hmm.
And over 14 million viewer drop off from the previous year. It's the Academy's third hostless show in a row, scored a 1.9 rating among adults 18 to 49, which is a 65% dip from 2020. For a comparison, last year's ceremony garnered a 23.6 million viewers, which is incredible. You went from 23.6 in a year to 9.8. So, like, Morgan, I know politics play a big deal. COVID played a big deal. I get it. But at what point will the Academy start looking at this like, all right, I mean, we could celebrate these nobody films in different categories. But at what point, this has been begged of the Academy for years now. If a film like Endgame makes $2 billion, right? And it is literally the most known film in the world. How does that not get nominated for the film of the year? Isn't the point of a award show? Like, that's like if Devonta Smith this year for the Eagles catches 100 balls, 1,800 yards, 25 touchdowns, right? Best player, the most popular player in the league. But yet they go and they give it to this other player who caught half the balls, half the yards, and had touchdowns because it was a good story. It's essentially what the Oscars does. They're not celebrating great film. They're celebrating what they handpick.
Well, they are. They're celebrating acclaimed films, I guess. I think what they need, I think honestly what they really need to do, I think they need to have a different award show.
They do.
And for a while, the Golden Globes kind of fulfilled this role, Golden Globes, you know, became more like the Oscars, but they need a show. Like if they, like the Oscars, what it is now shouldn't be broadcast. It should be, you know, just like another award ceremony that they all go to, and it can still be the highest touted award. But the publicized award ceremony should be something fun and for the off. Like the people watching it are the people who care and watch the films. So they definitely, I think, need to have a new award show. I think the Oscars can be something that they do at a fancy hotel that's not broadcast, and they just, the press just write about it the next day. Like,
yeah,
you know, the Academy Award went to this person. Like, the Academy can be one voting body. Then I think they need to create another voting body with different, you know, there's different regulations that get films or people nominated, like a film, depending, like it has to be maybe profit, you know, take a look at what its budget was versus, you know, how much money it brought in. And as long as the profit, or, you know, it's a certain percentage or something, it can be a viable nomination for something. So it actually does include public opinion. I think that they need to do a different show, and they can take the Oscars off and make it just like high, you know, touty, woohoo, whatever.
Yeah.
And then have a fun show that people enjoy watching that is aligned with what the public has actually watched. I personally think that's what they should do. And I think they'd have more success because so they like, still, go ahead.
I want to see if I can word this correctly, because I think it's a very simple solution attached to what the main problem is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say, I don't know. The point I'm trying to really make is, why would you have an award show on a national broadcast network every single year to award movies that nobody paid to see? And then you're expecting people in millions upon tens and tens of millions to watch you award these people who made movies that nobody saw. Instead, if you were to nominate, I don't care about the year, I'm just throwing movies out. If you nominated Infinity War, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Captain Marvel, No Time to Die, Bond movies. So and like maybe like a comedy, a Rock movie or Fast and Furious that made 800 million, a billion, like they always do. Don't you think if you nominate movies that made 500 to $1 billion, if they get nominated, those people are going to want to watch because they built millions upon millions of people went and saw these movies. So why wouldn't you broadcast and promote those movies for the Oscars, because that's the movies that people wanted to see and paid for, and you're not going to nominate them and expect that 15-year-old to want to watch, to be like, oh, maybe I can see Robert Downey Jr. go up and accept an award for Infinity War and he makes a funny speech. Isn't that kind of, you know, the point is I'm going to celebrate film that people saw and paid for. I don't give a shit about some indie film by Netflix. I want to see Robert Downey Jr. or Chris Pratt accept an award for Guardians, or Daniel Craig accept an award for Bond, because, okay, you know, it made $800 million.
Is it my turn now?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm very familiar with how it all works. So I'll kind of break that down for you.
Wait,
so
you agree with me though?
No, I do, but you'll understand as to why. It's one, it's very political, and, you know, like very into social issue films. How it works is these studios decide what films they want to push for awards in the awards season. And then they book out theaters, small theaters, to rescreen those movies for AMPIS members, press, whoever votes, right, for the various mm-hmm. different award shows. So it comes down to the studios and what movies they think are worthy and they want to put up for awards. So if you know, Disney did not screen Endgame in the awards circuit, it's not going to get voted upon. Like, I sat through screening after screening after screening for awards. And when I was doing it at that time, the Weinstein Company was still around. Most of the films I was screening were for the Weinstein Company. If a studio does not think that the film is going to get nominated by the Academy, they are not going to push it into the awards circuit. So it also just depends as to what the studios are deciding to push for awards. Whole season starting in like September, yeah, where press and AMPIS members have to go to these awards things. It's not if they saw it in theaters. It's if they see it in the awards circuit. So if a film isn't being pushed through the awards circuit, that's going to be looked over.
It doesn't make sense, because Disney knows Infinity War is going to make $1 billion.
But Disney knows who's voting. And AMPUS members is made up of old white men.
Yeah, but can't you force their hand?
And then, of course, the Actors Guild, Producers Guild. So they are picking films that will appeal to those people. And they know that their big blockbuster is not going to appeal to the howdy-towdy Producers Guild, the Actors Guild, and the old white men of AMPUS.
Yeah, but you know what, so it is going to appeal to? Screen it. The paying customer, the broadcast network.
I know, but they care more about getting the Oscar, because if they can tie Academy Award nominee to a little film that made no money,
right,
you better believe that when that film comes out on DVD that no one saw in theaters and it now has, you know, Academy Award winner on it, people will now go pay to see it. So now they're going to reap more money. So they also have motivation to push the smaller films that make no money, because they will actually get an influx of money from those films if those films are nominated, and especially if they win. People, if Meryl Streep's in a little film that no one's heard of and it gets nominated and it wins, you better believe that studio is printing, you know, Academy Award winner, Meryl 2021 Academy Award winner Meryl Streep. People will then pay to see it. So they're also going to make more money. So they have motivation to put to push the smaller films, because if the smaller films do get nominated or win, they will make more money. So that's why, that's part of the reason why. Also, they know people voting on these films like social issues. So they're going to pick their social issue films too. So that's why, that's where it all comes from. It has nothing to do with us, because we're the suckers who we want to see the movies that we want to see nominated. But then a lot of us, as soon as we saw, oh, Meryl Streep won for this movie, I've never even heard this movie, I'm going to watch it now. And now that money, that studio is making money from us paying to see the film that they pushed to win and then won, even though no one actually saw it. Now people are seeing it. That's the whole vicious circle, I would say.
It just seems like a tired circle.
It is, but it works.
So, well, it doesn't work because they had a 58% drop off.
But I mean,
my point is asking you,
and that's the point of it.
Do you think this is going to spark some sort of change? Like, this has to be a wake up call. Like,
no, literally, they're going to blame it on COVID.
You can't. Last year, you could have.
No, because not this year. No, no. Last year, the films up for contention were the 2019 films. Because the 2019 Oscars was supposed to take place in 2020. So this year was the 2020 films, right? Mm-hmm. So this was the COVID year.
Okay.
Even though it took place this year. So they're going to blame it on that. And then they're probably going to try and get even, I think they're going the wrong way. I think they're going to get more social, more political.
It's going to be canceled if it has another year like that. I mean, that just, it just will. I mean, the Golden Globes, I think, is about to be canceled for next year. Now, so it's, you know, it's ridiculous of what's going on. It just sucks. But all right, so before we head out of here, hun, and go to bed, but what do we have coming up? We have our first quote unquote
trip. We're going
getaway.
On a vacation.
No, we're going on a weekend trip for the first time. We're going on our first pseudo semi vacation since our honeymoon back in 2017, in the previous decade. We are going to Hershey Park next weekend. I have not ever stepped foot in Hershey Park or in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Well, lucky for you, you have a great friend who can tell you how great Hershey Park is. And
my
then you
wife?
Can come to your wife. No, Kyle. What you guys are not picking up here, so I will lay it all out, is I grew up going to Hershey Park at least once a year. So I'm very familiar with it. And I've been telling Chris ideas and telling Chris things. All of a sudden, Chris comes to me one day and is like, Kyle said this would be great for us to do at Hershey Park. And we should definitely check out this restaurant. And I'm like, so you'll listen to Kyle, but you're not going to listen to your wife, who's been there like, wow, that's such a great idea. We totally should do that. So it's just kind of funny.
So what is your opinion, my love, on it looks like things are kind of being eased up in terms of mask wearing. You know, are you going to be, you know, we talked about this a couple, you know, weeks ago or a week ago how one of the new created mental illness things that have been going on that people are worried about now is, oh, how to be back in the maskless life. Yet coming
sounds
from
like
people,
a really big problem.
Yeah, coming from people who beg every day to not wear a mask. So are you excited to finally get back to the point of, hey, I can walk around Hershey Park or I can possibly walk around ShopRite without having to think about a mask?
Yeah, I am, because I always forget my mask and I lost my good one. So it'd be really nice to not have to wear one.
I'm the carrier of her masks.
I know. It sucks that, for everyone to know, I mean, we've talked about how I'm pregnant, but my OBGYN made it clear that, you know, at the time where I'm due to give birth, they still fully anticipate that I will have to wear a mask the entire time through pushing, through everything.
It's pretty awful, isn't it?
And it is, like,
it's a disgrace.
Chris, it's still very strict where, like, Chris is the only one allowed in the room. And once he comes into the labor and delivery room, if he leaves, he's not allowed back.
Yeah.
So now we have to be extra careful with our toddler and make sure she's all taken care of. So I'm still a little surprised by how strict some of those things are.
It's such a scummy system.
And I guess I get it, but at the same time, there are some things where, like, I'm all for mask wearing, especially if it's proven to protect. But I also think that sometimes the cons can outweigh the pros. And I'm going to say, like, as a pregnant woman who the last time I gave birth, I had anxiety attacks, and you're supposed to breathe deep, you know, and, like, there's all these things, like the fact that I would have to wear a mask during that experience just doesn't seem very healthy. Mm-hmm. And if everyone in the room is vaccinated, I don't understand why there's more pros to me wearing a mask than cons, because I actually think that that's not very safe or healthy
scenario. Not to get graphic, but let's just say you're pushing and you have to breathe and you remove your mask. They're not just going to leave the room and be like, oh, well, we can't deliver this baby anymore until she puts a mask on.
I know, but one of the doctors in my practice is very harsh on it, and I'll probably get yelled at.
I'll kick him straight in his nuts said something.
So.
I'll kick her straight in her nuts if she says anything like that. Because it's just awful to think that a woman giving birth has to go through that. I will not be a fun person to be around if, you know, that's going on with you and you're.
Like, I hope I'm allowed to have ice chips whenever I want.
That's my only job.
Take my mask. I know that's your job.
And the fact that they're going to ask me to do multiple jobs is something that I'm not really enjoying thinking about right now. If I have to get ice and hold a leg, I don't know how that's even physically possible.
I don't.
We're going to have to move.
That sounds really difficult for you.
We're going to have to roll your bed towards
to
the
ice machine.
To the ice machine so I can reach.
No, I think you should get, like, one of those bungee cords and put it around my foot and just kind of hold it. And then, like, as you need to walk away, you can loosen a little bit, but you're still then holding the leg.
No,
I think that's what we should do.
Bad idea, although the circulation on your ankle might propose a problem.
That's the least I care about. Plus, if I have the epidural, I won't even feel it. So if I lose a foot in the process, I lose a foot in the process.
No, because then I got to take care of the infant, Addie, and you.
Oh, yes. I'm glad that that's your thought. What you have to suffer through if I lose a foot.
It was on your own mission.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. So thank you, my love, for hopping on here. We almost spoke
anytime,
for an hour.
My love. I'm sorry it took so long.
It's really okay. We're in the same house, going through the same things. So I just want to let everyone know out there to stay safe. We're doing our best here. You know, we're praying for everybody out there that is suffering, going through tough times, but you know, we're getting there. It looks like we're on the other end of this thing. And, you know, for a long time, everyone said, look, there's a light at the end of that tunnel. And it looks like that, you know, we're seeing that sunshine peek through the holes a little bit brighter right now. And that hole's getting bigger. So we're right there. This is exciting. I can't wait to finally get the hell out of New Jersey for more than a day. I'm excited to see something new. Thrilled to be able to provide this for my wife and our girl. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Excited for what's coming up in the future. And it looks like things are going to be happening so fast between now and the middle of July. But for that, next time we come on here, who knows what we'll talk about? It all depends.
It's my turn to pick a topic.
Oh, that's right. It's your turn. That's true. I've been asking for pop culture for like 3 episodes, and Morgan's like, we're not talking about that. We're going to talk about my OBGYN.
That's not what I said. And if I said it, I didn't sound like that.
That's great. All right, everyone. I hope you guys have a great weekend whenever you hear this. We're excited to bring you more episodes. We're not going anywhere. Sometimes it just takes a longer to get you guys an episode. But we are appointment podcasting. How about that? all right. So we're going to go to bed now. Morgan's going to be awake in like 6 hours.
You keep telling me you're waking up with her until now we're on the podcast. And now you're making it sound like I'm waking up with her.
Well, you were very adamant in the kitchen that, that I can sleep. I mean, I don't care.
Yeah, but we'll see how much you love me.
Because Addie went to bed at 10 o'clock, which means she's primed for a 5:30 wake-up call.
I know.
So I can't wait for that. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you guys soon. This is the Where to Begin podcast.
We
began, and this is the end of this episode, not the podcast. But we will catch you guys down the road. Have a good one, and bye-bye.
Bye.